Chapter 30. With his enhanced retinas switched to full sensitivity, it appeared as though Warlow was flying through a dry, iridescent mist. Ring particles still crawled with wayward spurts of energy. Micrometer dust flowed in slow streams around the large boulders and ice chunks. Despite the shimmering phosphorescence, he was basically flying blind. Occasionally he could catch a glimpse of stars flickering past his feet, short-lived embers skipping from an invisible bonfire. After leaving the Lady Macbeth, he had moved 12 kilometres out from Aurora, an orbit which saw him falling behind the sheltering starship. The big dark sphere, upper hull glinting in a livid red glow from its own thermodump panels, had been lost from sight in 3 minutes. Isolation had tightened its bewitching fingers almost immediately. Strangely enough, here, where he could barely see 10 meters, a realization of the universe's vastness was all too strong. The 10-megaton bomb was strapped to his chest, a fat ovoid 75 centimeters high, weightless, yet weighing heavily in his heart, titanium and composite device though it was. Sara had given him one of the Edenist Bitech processor blocks, which he had modified with augmentation modules. The idea was to provide him with a link to Aethra in case the Grameen should unexpectedly alter track. Makeshift, right, this whole mission. "Can I speak with you alone?" he datavised. "Of course," the habitat answered. "I would be glad to keep you company. Yours is a fraught task." "But it is mine alone." "You are the best qualified." "Thank you. I wanted to ask you a question on the nature of death." "Yes?" "It involves a small story." "Go on. I'm always interested to hear of human events. I understand very little of your species so far, even though I have inherited a wealth of data."
10 years ago, I was a crew member in the starship Harper's Dragon. It was a line cargo ship, nothing special, although the pay was comfortingly regular. We had a new cadet lieutenant to join us on Woolsey called Felix Barton. He was only 20, but he had assimilated his didactic courses well. I found him competent and a reasonable messmate. He was no different to any other young man starting his career. Then he fell in love with an Edenist woman.
"Ah, this is perhaps a Shakespearean tragedy?"
Warlow saw thin ribbons of orange dust winding corkscrew fashion around an ice chunk straight ahead. A bird kite's tail, he thought. They sparked pink in his carbetanium space armor as he splashed through. Then he was past them and curving round a mealy boulder, guidance and optical interpretation programs operating in tandem to steer him automatically around obstacles. "Not at all. It is a very straightforward story. He simply became besotted. I admit she was beautiful, but then every geniered human seems to be. Harper's Dragon had a regular contract to supply her habitat with specialist chemicals for one of their electronics manufacturing stations. After 4 trips, Felix declared he could not bear to be parted from her. And he was lucky. She felt the same way about him."
"How fortunate."
"Yes. Felix left Harper's Dragon and became an Edenist. He had neural symbionts implanted to give him general affinity, and underwent specialist counseling to help him adapt. The last time Harper's Dragon visited, I spoke with him, and he was extremely happy. He said he had fitted in perfectly, and that she was expecting their first child."
"That is nice. There are something like 1.5 million Adamists who become Edenists every year."
"So many? I didn't know."
70% are love cases similar to your friend. The rest join because it attracts them intellectually or emotionally. Over half of the love cases are Adamists who form relationships with Voidhawk crew members, which is only to be expected given that they have most contact with Adamists. It leads to many jokes about the Voidhawk families having wild blood."
"So, tell me, is the conversation absolute? Do these newfound Edenists transfer their memories into the habitat when they die?"
"Of course."
His neural mnemonics displayed a guidance plot updating his position. Purple and yellow vectors slithered through his head, temporarily displacing his view of the irradiated dust. He was on course. His course.